Kritva samanav anilaujitasanam. Shodhanam uttapya chanabhi chakrata. Shane hridi stapya dhiyor asistitam. Kantai bruvor madhyam aninditanayat. Kritva, after placing, samanau, in equilibrium, anilau, the prana and apana airs, jita asana, having controlled the sitting posture, sa, sati, udanam, the life air, utapya, raising, cha, and nabhi, chakrata, at the circle in the navel, chanaihi, gradually, hridi, in the heart, stapya, placing, dhiya, with the intelligence, urasi, towards the pulmonary passage. Stitam, having been placed. Kanta, through the throat. Bruvo, of the eyes. Madhyam, to the middle. Anidita, the blameless sati. Anayata, raised. Translation. First of all, she sat in the required sitting posture, and then she carried the life air upwards and placed it in the position of equilibrium near the navel. Then she raised her life air, mixed with intelligence, to the heart, and then gradually towards the pulmonary passage, and from there to between her eyebrows. Purport. The yogic process is to control the air passing within the body in different places called sat chakra, the six circles of air circulation. The air is raised from the abdomen to the navel, from the navel to the heart, from the heart to the throat, from the throat to between the eyebrows, and from between the eyebrows to the top of the cerebrum. That is the sum and substance of practicing yoga. Before practicing the real yoga system, one has to practice the sitting postures because this helps in the breathing exercises, which control the airs going upwards and downwards. This is a great technique, which one has to practice to attain the highest perfectional stage of yoga. But such practice is not meant for this age. No one in this age can attain the perfectional stage of such yoga. But people indulge in practicing sitting postures, which is more or less a gymnastic process. By such bodily gymnastics, one may develop good circulation, may therefore keep one's body fit. For one simply restricts oneself to that gymnastic process, one cannot attain the highest perfectional stage. The yoga process, as described in the Keshava Shruti, prescribes how one can control his living force according to his desire and transmigrate from one body to another or from one place to another. In other words, yoga practice is not meant to keep the body fit. In any transcendental process of spiritual realization, automatically helps one to keep the body fit. For it's the spirit soul that keeps the body always fresh. As soon as the spirit soul is out of the body, the material body immediately begins to decompose. Any spiritual process keeps the body fit without separate endeavor. But if one takes it that the ultimate aim of yoga is to maintain the body, then he is mistaken. The real perfection of yoga is elevation of the soul to a higher position, or the liberation of the soul from material entanglement. Some yogis try to elevate the soul to the higher planetary systems, where the standard of life is different from that of this planet, and where the material comforts, lifespan, and other facilities for self-realization are greater. and some yogis endeavor to elevate the soul to the spiritual world, the spiritual Vaikuntha planets. The Bhakti Yoga process directly elevates the soul to the spiritual planets, where life is eternally blissful and full of knowledge. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga is considered to be the greatest of all yoga systems. This aspect of establishing that devotional service is the topmost of all yoga. So this is not just something that's said, it's not a sentiment, it's actually a fact, it's a science. Because yoga means to link with the Supreme. There's no other meaning to yoga. So that means how you're going to connect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, now, since God is the creation, that would mean then there will be many aspects or ways to connect, how to make that connection. And that will be according to basically a living entity's taste. Because the living entity, not being God conscious, or not being on the liberated platform, or even being on the liberated platform, the living entity is in a particular situation, has a particular taste. And through that taste, they see the world. That's how it works. What is your value system is how you see the world. What you value is how you interpret everything. Right? Because the mind has to accept and reject. So it's according to the mind's interest. How the mind sees the world is how you interpret everything else. So, since everything is Krishna, and our conditioning therefore connects us to a certain aspects or combinations of aspects of Krishna, then the process can take that element of attachment, or those elements of our values, of our and how we perceive the world, and through that see Krishna and connect to Krishna. Therefore, all the Vedic literatures describe so many different, seemingly different processes. The different shastras have all these different, topics. But all they're actually talking about is Krishna. They're not talking about something else because everything's Krishna. Right? Let us say the topic is this room. So now we can talk about usage of the room. And in usage we'd get into, you know, sitting space and about the columns and the doors and people coming in and coming out and where to place things and how you can get the most and get all kinds of statistics like, you know, one person takes up this much space and then depending upon their, social custom, then there's a certain amount of distance they like between themselves and others. And so, therefore, as an international movement, it will be basically predominantly Western because they're the most arrogant, but it will have some influence of the Oriental and the other parts of the world where they don't mind sitting closer together. So there will be a small percentage closer than a standard European sitting. So therefore, in this room, we can go on and on like this, and there can be studies and, Howard versus, Smith, in 1793, over on how many people could sit on a dunking stool. Like this kind of thing, you could go on and on and on and make up literatures about it. But it's only one aspect. Another, we could get into the aesthetics. Another, we could get into the air. Another, we could get into the usage of electricity. Where's the most efficient place to put the fans? Another, we could get into is acoustics. Like that, you know what I'm saying? So we could go on and on and on. But it's only one topic, a room. So that is the Vedic literatures. It's many different perspectives about one thing, Krishna. Not something else. The Ayurveda is not discussing something different than astrology, that's different from logic, that's different from history. That's different from ritual. It's all describing the same thing. It's just which perspective you take. Right. That's all. Now here, it mentions, here just to show a connection. The yoga system here, so we're talking life airs, moving the life airs up. So she situates it in the navel circle. from the abdomen. So that means you've already moved it up. So that means it's in the solar plexus. The solar plexus is where the intelligence is situated, right? In the way of its effect on the body. So when you're dealing with shabda or sound, so when you're trying to establish philosophy or grammar, all these different things, then they go like this. The sound vibration starts in the lowest, in the abdomen, in the lower chakra. It comes up, it first has its form, you know, what it is, what it can do. Then it comes up to the heart, then there's the element of what we want to do with it. But you will think that they're two different things. They're one thing, it's just how you use it. Right? Somebody uses the knife to cut potatoes. Right? Somebody else uses it to, you know, screw and unscrew screws in the wall. Right? Somebody else uses it as, you know, conversation piece. You know, oh wow, where'd you get that? Oh, that's from, you know, the battle of this, you know, like, you know, it's like that. You understand? So there's one thing. So it seems to be different. The people are different, how they'll dress, how they'll talk, their vocabulary are different. But it's the same thing. So yoga system, there's only one yoga system, and that's connecting with God. But the point is do you actually want to understand that or not? How much do you want to understand? You connect yourself with the world, and you're in harmony with the world. But who is this world? Who's created it? Who's made the laws? Right, it's mentioned here, health. So, you know, health, we breathe nicely, we eat nicely, we sit nicely, and because of that we're peaceful, so we want to keep the mind that, so we deal with everybody nicely, all that. That's, we can call that yoga because it does connect you with God's laws. But at the same time is for that, all that endeavor, because the endeavor is the same. You're dealing with one thing, so the endeavor is the same. What do you want to get from it? That's the thing. What do you want to get? You want to get a relationship with Godhead, an eternal, loving relationship? Or you just want to get your body in tune with, you know, the cosmos and have good health and feel peaceful and good about yourself? But the endeavor you're going to have to put into, to be nice, to restrict your diet, to see that you're only in certain situations, you're going to do exactly the same thing. Anybody who is in any way trying to be in any way progressive in any field is making the same endeavor. But unfortunately, they don't understand this. And so, you're working in the field of economics, and you're investing 2 paisa, and you got back 3, and you're going, whoopee. But that same process, you could have invested much more, gotten back much more. All you have to realize is what you have. Right? You have a pile of money, but you come up and pick off 2 paisa off the top and say, it's happening. Or you can invest the whole pile. So that's the thing. Understand? So in this, then yoga means connecting with Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But you can connect lower than that with Paramahamsa, lower than that with Brahman, lower than that just being pious within the world, lower than that just being efficient, you know, having money and all that, lower than that just your senses. You can connect on any of those levels. It's all God anyway. But the point is what do you want to have, an interactive relationship or just something that you're part of, that you think you're the Lord of? That's basically what is being offered. So the highest yoga system means that you see directly that everything's connected to Krishna and engage in things connected to Krishna. So it seems very simple and all that. The others are more technical. They have their language and all that. We also have ours. The Prabhupada was so kind, he made it into simple English so we could all understand. But otherwise, if you go through, you read the word for word, you'll see plenty of nice terminology, but straightforward translation. So we have to be very, very careful to have that faith that devotional service is the topmost yoga system, and it gives the best benefit. And at the same time, is see that whatever endeavor you're making, whether you appreciate it or not, you like the more devotional, you want to be more practical. You like the Vedic, you want to be more practical. Following the Vedic, Vaishnav etiquette or not, because you're just being practical. So, in any case, you still have restrictions. You still, if you want to be modern, liberal man, you have to restrict yourself very much to a particular value system, a way you dress, talk, walk, eat, interact with others, say hello, goodbye, right? All this, it's all there. You have to, if you move from that, then according to the liberal, then you are not properly situated. So it's very restricted. So the point we see here is that in the yoga system, restriction is necessary. If you want to get a result in a particular area, you have to work in that area. She wants to raise the life air, she has to work within that. She has to sit properly, breathe properly, face the proper directions, because it's all controlled by the laws of nature. So she does that. You want to do business, you have to situate yourself somewhere properly. You can't sit out in the middle of a jungle with no contact and think you're going to do great business. Right? You have to be in the right place. Right? Right place, right people, right situations. Everything has to be there. So this is one of the side aspects that's being showed, is whatever you're doing, you have to follow a process. Even if you don't accept any process, you're following the process of not accepting any process. So anytime a process comes up, you'll be very careful to avoid it. But that's a process. You know, it's a perspective. And you're very careful about it. So we should understand that all the different things that we do, there will always be, because it's interactive with the material energy, it will always give some result within the material energy. But because the material energy is a manifestation of Krishna's potency, it doesn't end there. It ends with a relationship with Krishna. So, yes, you can manipulate the material energy, you can become very expert in whatever it is that you want to be expert at. But if in that you're not seeing Krishna and not connecting to Krishna, you've missed the point no matter how expert or how professional you are. You've missed the point. And the worst part is that that same endeavor, you could get Krishna consciousness. The same endeavor. Right? The big businessman, big manager, why is he successful? Because he does whatever he likes when he likes, because he's the big man? No. He's there at the meeting, on time, in the right place, spending the money, making the endeavor, putting in the time and energy, educating himself. Therefore he's successful. He restricts himself to that area. He follows the rules and regulations of that area. Because it's Krishna. There's going to be rules. Krishna makes the rules. Right? But for Krishna, the rules aren't the point. The rules are simply there to create an environment to interact. How does Radha and Krishna get together? Because it's been recommended Radharani has to do worship of the sun god. So then, that would mean she goes to the temple. Right? Now, if in a modern scenario, the girls do all the puja, then what does Radharani need Krishna to be the pujari for? So because being a girl, she needs a pujari to do the puja, therefore Krishna can disguise himself as a pujari and come there. And when he disguises himself, that's one of the 64 arts that Krishna is good at, no one can tell who he is. So therefore, Jatila, Kotila, and everybody can't tell who this pujari is. They just know he's very attractive, very nice, seems to be very expert. And Madhu Mangal, they know is a, you know, Brahmin, they know him, and he's recommending, yes, he's a very good pujari. So then Krishna is doing all the puja for them, and Radharani, she doesn't know, so he's showing her how to do the puja and everything like that. And they're all very happy. And then according to grammar, right, because if we didn't have grammar, then how would they talk? How would they interact? And because grammar is such that you can get multiple meanings out of one thing, or you have synonyms. You have all these subtleties of language. Therefore, Radha and Krishna can be using standard words, but because of the context, it means something else. So Jatila will think it means one thing, and for Radha and Krishna, they're meaning something completely different. So without that, how does this pastime go? Because we'll see, read this pastime, go, wow, this is a fun pastime, very nice pastime. But how would it happen unless there is something that their human life is benefited by ritualistic worship? Piety is important. Proper etiquette, social customs, language, dress. Right? If Radharani is out in a, you know, in a spaghetti top, then how would she cover her face from one side so that Jatila thinks she's just being shy and offering the puja, but she's covering her face so that Jatila can't see her smiling because she's with Krishna? Go ahead, tell me. You tell me, because he can't. So God made all these different rules and regulations simply for interaction. So what does that mean? That means everything, everywhere, is meant to interact with Krishna. If you don't, you miss the point. And if you think all those rules and regulations are the point, you've missed the point again. So you follow them because that's the medium. But the point is it's a medium for what? Relationship with Godhead. That's the point. So when anybody gets into their health trip and food trip and Ayurvedic, non-Ayurvedic, you know, alternative this and that, their dress freaky things, their money freaky things, their political freaky things, know it, if you don't actually see it in connection to Krishna, you've missed the point. You've just missed the point. Everything is for knowing Krishna. And because God's unlimited, there's unlimited ways to approach. Why is it unlimited? Otherwise, then it gets boring. Same pastime every day. Right? Same pastime every day. But there's variety. Because God's energy is unlimited. Therefore, there's unlimited variety. But the principles on which you interact are established. The principles are there. And with that, then you can create unlimited variety. That's the expertise. So, yeah. So this is the purpose that is going on here, is that the yoga system's being followed, but it's for the purpose, this higher purpose. At the same time, is it deals with the lower purposes. So this idea is that, oh, it's that's philosophy, it doesn't deal with real life. That's atheism, if you really want to know. To think the philosophy of Krishna consciousness doesn't actually address your day-to-day life is atheism. Because your day-to-day life is made out of what? You created it, or it's made out of God? What you're looking for is God. Everything is there. What do you want money. Where did money come from? You made it up? Maybe George Washington like that. You know? You know, he was the big statesman, right? So, you know, who made it? Comes from God. Family, God. Love, God. Power, God. Beauty, God. Renunciation, God. Knowledge, God. Go ahead, name every value you have. It goes back to God. Nowhere else. This is the purpose of everything. So to not see like this means you're seeing less than you could actually see. You're getting less benefit than you could get. And you will get sidetracked by those things. I remember we had a god brother. He was in L.A. He was doing a very strict Chaturmasya Vrata. Wouldn't eat anything, you know, practically. And so then someone came with some Mahaprasadam. You know, he's giving out this much. He wouldn't take it because, you know, in there something was fried or something was with oil or something was with salt or something. Like this, he wouldn't take it. The word got back to Prabhupada, who was also in L.A. And he said he missed the point. He's a fool. So the point is connected. The Chaturma is there so you connect to Krishna. There's Mahaprasadam. They're not saying, hey, why don't we go out to Domino's and have a pizza? And he says, no, I'm a Chaturmasya. He says, it wasn't that. is Mahaprasad. So he's missed the point. It doesn't mean the regulations are... Prabhupada didn't say that the Chaturmasya was a problem. But he's missed the point of what it's for. This is the thing, is that the simultaneously that this forms and rules and regulations have their value and are necessary, at the same time their only necessity and value is this connection to Krishna. Right? So you can't connect to Krishna without it. Right? So therefore, since everything is Krishna, to say the philosophy doesn't connect with my life means you think God didn't make all this. All your feelings, all your needs, that didn't come from God. Why are they all the same? Why can you write a novel, tell a story, make a movie, and everyone can relate to it? Why? You know, guy did this, girl did that. Why? Because it's all created by Krishna. The emotions, the needs, the desires, the paths that those moods and feelings will follow, it's all created by Him. So the philosophy, all it does is explain the science of this. That's what the philosophy... So everything in your life is described by the philosophy. If you can't connect them, then it means it's time to contemplate more. Sit down and think. You can also walk around and think. Brush your teeth and think. You know, like that. But think. You have to think. Then you can see the connection between this. If I go out in the car, you know, just, you know... deal with it properly, improperly, you know, like this and that, the car will get banged up, it won't run properly. I don't deal with the gears, I just change them when I want, whichever direction I want, because I feel like it, you know. You don't understand, it's just the mood. Yeah, but then you lose your, you know, transmission, whatever. Why? Because it's against the laws of God. You want to connect with God in the form of a well-running car, or you want to get from point A to B very fast, or you want to go out and impress people. You have to follow God's rules. So it works because you're humble. You accept that I have to deal in this way. You're respectful to the car. You're tolerant that, yes, it's going to take me 2 hours to get there. Right? The kid in the back seat goes, "Are we there yet?" "No, no. It'll be, you know, another hour." "Are we there yet?" "No, no, no. It's only been another 10 seconds." "Oh. Are we there yet?" No, I mean, that's for the kid in the back seat. You're like that. Will you ever get there? No. So you're following. You're humble. You're tolerant. You're respectful, and you're not looking for something for yourself because you have to focus on your driving or whatever you're doing. So what is that? That's the third verse of the Shikshastakam. Anything you want to do anywhere, it works by that verse. That is the mechanics of the cosmos. You use it, it works. You don't use it, it won't work. It won't work. And so that same endeavor could get you God consciousness. But all you've done, because you're being practical, because philosophy doesn't connect with my life, is gotten down to the supermarket to buy, you know, some breakfast cereal. That's all you've gotten from it. You've had to do it. You had to adjust your life. You know, mom wanted to do this, then she figured out there's nothing there for the kid to eat, so then she has to get in the car, has to go down, she has to do it, she's forced. She does all these things. That same endeavor, that same tolerance would have gotten a God consciousness. But it won't. Why? Because the outlook on God consciousness and philosophy and its connection to your life is illusory. So in illusion they think it doesn't connect to my life. And I'm just being practical. I got to get something to eat for my kid. What has a philosophy got to do with it? Philosophy has everything to do with it. Everything. So this concept that there's a separation between God and His creation, the philosophy and the application, this is dualism. It's material consciousness. Pure material consciousness. That is illusory. It's not like, okay, it's an alternative consciousness. It's just illusion. Because it's God. It's His rules. It's His game. He calls them pastimes. You call it something serious. Because for Him, it's the interaction between Him and His devotees. But for us, we think, no, I got to get here. I got to get this power, this money, this, that. But it's his game. But we claim that it's ours and claim we can do anything we want. But if you note carefully, nobody does who's successful. They're all very, very careful about how they deal with the material energy, because they know if they don't deal properly, they will not get a result. But somehow or another, Krishna consciousness, you can deal however you like, and you'll get the same result. I do think this philosophy was professed. I think it was back, I can't remember when it was, but it was like, you know, over 100 years ago, like that. I think it was Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, they had this philosophy. Whatever you do, it will end up. So they think, whatever I feel like in Krishna, that's what will work. But when it comes to material life, I'm very exact, very strict with it. That's illusion. So we have to see is that the yoga process is actually connected to everything we do. But being aware of that, then we call it yoga. If we're not aware, we call it illusion. But we understand, then it's yoga. Any questions? Yes.
So you mentioned about Chaturmas and that story. Now, when I fast on an appearance day or on Ekadasi, sometimes Mahaprasadam may come my way. So then, what would be your advice?
The thing is, Mahaprasad may come your way, but this person, it's not that when he does eat, he's going to eat that Mahaprasad. His point was, it's not that I don't eat now. The point was, is I don't eat that prasad, that kind of food, because it's against the restrictions. You understand? It means, what is the point? How is it going to please? Because, why he's saying he missed the point, because within the 44 rules of the Chaturmasya, then there are rules about accepting Mahaprasadam. So they don't see that. They only see, no six tastes, no eating until this time of the day, no eating anything fried or cooked in oil or this. They only see those. But the actual essential ones are the ones connected with devotional service. They also mention that you should be more careful in your association, keep better association, always be absorbed in hearing and chanting, always be absorbed in service to the Lord. They're part of the 44 rules, but they don't catch those. So they miss the point. So the thing is, on a fast day, then that fasting is what pleases Krishna. But it's the fasting is only part of a festival. So the festival includes three things: fasting, special pujas, and special remembering, and prasad. So all of those together, then it's complete. Just like deity worship isn't complete if you're nice with the deity and not nice with everybody else. It's the same thing as fasting is part of it. Then there'll be a feast, right? And the feast includes grains, right? Does that make sense? So that will then happen at its time. There'll be a time for remembrance. There'll be a time for the puja. So traditionally these things would go over generally 2 or 3 days. Because one day would be more focused on the remembrance, one day more on the rituals, fasting and that, and one day more on the prasad. Because it's sometimes hard to mix them. You have a big feast, no one sits around and talks. They go to sleep, so therefore that's separate. Fasting and feasting also don't quite go together so well. I'm not quite sure, but it just doesn't. The ritual also in eating doesn't really go together, right? Because you get lethargic. Plus, if you go to eat, then you have to go to the toilet. Then that's always a problem. So, and fasting and feasting is that after you fast, it's hard to eat. So therefore, then there's some break, and then there's that. That's why you see us on these really serious fasts. The feast is the next day. Half-day fast, you can do it the same day. But these big ones, then generally it's the next day. Does that make sense? So it's a whole festival. So you have to see the complete aspect. So the Chaturmasya means you're reducing your bodily comforts and necessities that distract you from being absorbed in devotional activities and replace it with doing devotional activities. The point is not to be austere. The point is to be not so sidetracked. It's just like this. If you're always sleeping on a very comfortable bed, then you just think about the bed and go to sleep and that's it. But now if I sleep on a mat on the floor, then I'm going to remember why I'm sleeping on this mat on the floor. And so the tendency to offer obeisances before going to sleep, offer the activities you've done during the day, some more remembrance of the Lord will be there. Plus, you'll only go to bed when you're supposed to go to bed. You won't go to bed early. You won't go in and lounge around on the bed. You don't go lounge on a mat. You know, you lounge on a bed and pillows and nice like that and hang out and waste more time. Mat, you're assigned to sleep, you roll it out, you know, and then you won't lay there in bed for another hour or two and, you know, work on your internet or call a few people or, you know, like that. You'll just get up because it's a mat. So, therefore, then one sleeps on the floor. You know, that's the idea. And then you judge these things according to what you can do. Does that make sense? You know, how much you can do. So all the rules, they have levels. There's not just like the stick, there's levels.
So there's no like one answer. However, there may be a case where Mahaprasada is not accepted on the fast day.
It is, but what is the point? You know, I'm saying, in other words, if we establish that you're doing a fast and it's accepted or not accepted, what is the point that will be established by this? You understand? Because there must be some principle that's being followed. Detail will always be contradictory. So that's why it's important to discuss and understand the principle. Because the detail of eating and not eating, or it's like, oh well, it's Mahaprasad, so even I should eat the grains on Ekadasi, you know, because it's no, because Krishna himself has said he likes you to fast from grains on Ekadasi. It pleases him. So the point is to please him. And even if it's not, then if you want material benefit, then by following it that way you'll get the particular result. So one has to know what is the rules and then what actually how it pleases the Lord. Then one can decide between the various kinds of festivals and the various ways of dealing with fasting and eating, then what particular detail is appropriate in following that rule. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it'll always seem that there's contradiction.
But there was a story with Ayendra Prabhu. Once we took some prasadam for him from Mayapur, and then at that time he didn't finish his puja yet, so he said that, sorry, I'm not going to eat it right now, but I will keep it later when I finish my puja. So the thing is that when the fasting was over, then he took the prasadam. And he was here a vow that he won't eat until his deed is eaten.
Yeah.
So deed is took prasadam, then he took also. So that was his vow. So then when he finished the vrata, then he took the prasad. So when Jagannath prasad comes from Puri, for example, we might not take it immediately, but keep it for the next day if it comes on Ekadashi, because then we can break Ekadashi with it, for example.
Yeah.
Something like that. That what
it's good. You have to see what is the vrata and what is the purpose of that vrata. Like that. If one is just doing puja, then if someone comes to Mahaprasad, then there is the option that you can take it. Because generally, when you're doing puja, people don't come with Mahaprasad. But if you've taken a vrata, you won't eat until the Lord's eaten. Then that's out of consideration of him. So then if someone comes with that, then you will eat, but only after he's eaten. So you have to see what is the nature of the vrata? How does it connect to Krishna?
I have two questions. I take two questions now, or I take one, and after I tell another. But the first is, I am in big problem, because the doctor tell me I cannot take any fried, ni one drop of ghee, ni nothing like this, and Krishna don't like prasadam without ghee, without nothing, no? O sea, I don't know. Bueno, a mí I cannot take, but Krishna don't like, no? Without ghee.
What what exactly is the?
But the question is that I don't know what I must make.
I mean, what you do at the home.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, at a home in this case, well, I mean, depending upon what facility you have, then you cook whatever it is that you can eat. And then if you have the facility, when you offer it, put some ghee on it and offer it to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? And then that you can distribute to other people. Does that make sense? If you can't distribute to other people, then at least within the mind, put some ghee on it and put a few preparations that you might like. So like Sanatan Goswami, all he had was, you know, something to make chapatis out of. They don't exactly make chapatis. They make the dough and then they just put the dough straight on the fire. It gets cooked, but it also gets a little black. So he's offering this to Madan Mohan. And Madan Mohan is basically, you know, at least a little ghee or a little salt, you know, like this, you know. So it's